I'm Deb Bradfield. I'm standing in for Brian Dwyer today, and I've got Kathy in here, Kathy Donovan and Lee Kelly, and they've come in to talk about a few books with us today. So thanks very much for coming in.
It's a great pleasure.
Yes. We won't tell Brian about the technical difficulties, don't worry.
He's probably sitting at home saying, what are they doing? They're incompetent. Anyway, hopefully we've got it now. But, we've got two things on today. We're going to change the format a little bit. We're going to talk about some favourite authors first. And later on, we may get to what are we reading, but we've got so many books here, we might not get to that. So it might be just favourite authors today. And so, Lee, who is your favourite author, or one of? Probably not your favourite.
Well, the author I've chosen to talk about, probably unwisely, is Annie Proulx. Sounds like I'm one of those girls off, that comedy show, Prue and Trudy. But we looked up how to pronounce it, and that's right. I always used to say it Proulx. And I chose her because I'd enjoyed one of her books, and I've read a few of them, and I just bought a new one, so I thought this would be a perfect one for me to discuss. But I didn't really like the new book, so that'll be interesting when I come to that one.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Yeah, because I've read the shipping news myself, but I haven't read the other two that I can see you've got on the desk there.
She writes a variety of short stories, and also she's done a couple of novels, and the shipping news was her, breakthrough because it won the Pulitzer Prize. Yeah. But this last one that I've just read, Barkskins, has just been published, and she's 80 now.
Mm.
Yeah, so wow. That's a fair go for an 80-year-old to produce a 700-page book.
Well, I was going to talk about Kate Atkinson, and I really admire her writing. She, over a 10-year period, so from 1995 through to last year, she's written 12 books. So she's the sort of writer I'd like to be. I've read about five, maybe six of her books, and I love them all. Their pages, minor tragedies and themes of life that just absorb everybody's real life,
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a look at a couple of reviews before we came in, and she's a bit polarising because there are a few guys did reviews who didn't like her at all.
Sure.
But, yes, I have also read her and like her a lot. The first one that I read I probably liked the most. But, yeah, tell us a little bit about it, Kathy, a little bit more, why you like her.
Yeah, well, I'm fascinated because I've not even heard of her.
Oh, I haven't.
Well, she's famous also because one of her books, which is called Case Histories, was made into a television series, BBC television series. And I think it's Jackson Brodie, he's the private investigator in that book, has been sort of picked out and the central character, I guess, in three or four tragic sort of little stories or vignettes that turn out to be these polarising sort of life situations. And so he is this character who's a bumbling, guy with a past whose marriage has failed, who's just an all character. And so what he's interested in doing is investigating failed marriages, helping people rescue cats, that sort of thing. So he's just terrific. So I did write down the three cases that go with that book. One is about a missing daughter, Olivia, and she disappears from a tent at a slumber party. And the whole sort of thread of that story is about how her three sisters and her father just never recover in their lives from her disappearance. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Theo Weyer and his young daughter, Laura. And he's so afraid that something's going to happen to her. He's afraid when she walks out the door that she'll be struck by lightning or, everything. And so he, one summer at the end of her school years, he says, she has to get, you know, some sort of work. And he says, come and work in my solicitor's office. And, of course, that turns out to be the worst thing because disaster strikes and it becomes really dark, you know, what happens there. And then Michelle Fletcher, who feels trapped by her husband, her baby and her marriage, and just snaps in this most, you know, violent way. And so you get this whole small-scale tragedy unfolding. But the whole, thread through it is, how do you live your life if you've lost someone or someone's disappeared from your life or you lose the person you love most in your life? And it happens. Yeah, so I...
How does he get involved in the investigations? Like, is he like a private detective or is he just stumbles across these cases?
No, he's a private detective and he's invited in, and so the cases all weave together backwards and forwards through the book. And that's one of the devices she uses in all her novels, which is to, you know, she has various devices. One's, you know, flashbacks, you know, so behind the scenes at the museum there's lots of flashbacks and footnotes because you're actually following this really complex storyline of the great-great-grandmother, the grandmother, the mother, and then Ruby Lennox, who's the sort of, you know, thread throughout that novel. And then there was also, you know, she has these, you know, almost, you know, she starts her book at a certain point. Going to happen. So she's got all these chronological devices that enable her to weave quite a lot of characters into one novel.
Yes, so I remember that from behind the scenes at the museum, and that was the first one that I read, and I really liked it so much I then went out and bought a few more of her books, but they all had the detective character, and I was a little bit disappointed because I sort of wanted that same book that,
yes,
you know, behind the scenes at the museum, and I was fiddling with this monitor, but the humour in it, very funny.
It's, you know, very funny.
She's just got that fabulous turn of phrase that makes you giggle. So, you know, the most, you know, really, it could be a real, you know, it's tragic stuff she's talking about often, but it
at the museum, and in all of the stories in this, her great grandmother, her mother, her grandmother, all the stories are about, in one way or another, they're all really disappointed in how their marriages turned out, and they all marry somebody second best. You know, they had the, you know, the brief encounter with the love of their life, but it doesn't come to pass. And so she says of her mother, because she is the narrator, Ruby Lennox, and she's narrating from conception right through till, you know, she's had children and her mother's got dementia, sort of thing. So this is at the very beginning when we're at the conception stage, and she's writing of her mother. My poor mother's very disappointed by marriage. It's failed to change her life in any way except by making it worse. If I listen in on her airwaves, I can hear an endless monologue on the drudgery of domestic life. Why didn't anyone tell me what it would be like? The cooking, the cleaning, the work. I wish she would stop this and start daydreaming again, but on and on she goes. And as for babies, well, the broken nights, the power struggles, the labour pains. She addresses the front right burner of the cooker directly, her head wobbling from side to side, rather like the parrot in the shop beyond. At least that's all over with. And,
Yes, and there was also a part in that, but I found that part very humorous, what you read out about the being, you know, still inside her mother. But there's later on in the book, one of the girls, I think there were three girls, one of them dies, and the other two
And she's also, you know, she has this dark humour because her sister Gillian dies. She's run over by a bus, and prior to being run over by a bus, she's a popular one, and you know, she becomes deified after she's dead. But she is actually the one that pushed the twin sister of Ruby Pearl into this ice cold pond, and then blamed Ruby for the death of this sister.
Yeah, we don't find that out till quite a lot later, though, do we? So things are sort of we find out about them
later,
and sometimes before the fact. So the chronology is very confused, but actually that adds to it, I think.
Yeah.
So where are they set? What sort of era and country? And
well, this particular one, behind the scenes at the museum, really it starts out, it moves backwards and forwards in time from sort of World War One through to about the 1980s we finish up in. So it spans quite a few generations. And
it's in England somewhere. Yes. She's English.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's York or something like that. Yeah, the museum set in York. Yeah, so it spans, you know, the both world wars, the economic crash, the permissive 60s, somebody's coronation, you know.
Yeah, so a bit of a potted.
Family through each of those dramas that are occurring in real life. And I love that because I'm actually a bit of a genealogy fan myself, and so I've been searching back through my own family's tree. I haven't found any really good skeletons yet, but what I love about this book is that you find out these secrets, like, you know, there's the story that everyone tells, that the great-grandmother died in childbirth or something, I think, and then you find out later in the book that she actually ran off with the photographer because husband was a drunk, and she looked at him one day and thought, oh, I just can't live on with this man. And so she just ran away from her children and her husband and was never seen of again.
Yeah, so all these things are revealed slowly throughout the book.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's amusing, and it's it makes you feel a lot of meaningful emotions, I guess, about little things that you might be able to connect with in your own life.
It was interesting when we were talking about crime a few weeks ago with Brian, we were saying that, you know, what makes a good crime story, and, you know, it's different for different people, but I sort of like that mystery thing, but it has to sort of be coupled with those strong characters and also something very human. And it sounds like that's what that writer does, that she's got that sort of idea of the marriage and, you know, family secrets and all that as well.
We make through life, you know, you everything can just turn on a dime. Someone can just, you know, step off the, you know, the curb and die, or, you know, as in the case of the great grandmother, she made this snap decision to leave her drunken husband because, you know, she just wanted adventure, and then her life turned into just another type of drudgery, and she regretted it all her life. You know, we find later in the novel. So, yeah, those sorts of things that happen.
So that's Kate Atkinson. You're listening to Apollo Bay Radio, where this is Deb Bradfield here with Kathy Ann Lee, and we're talking about some there, I think, from this quite funny writer.
Yes, well, this quote is, "You can step into the same river, but the water will always be new." So she's always talking about, you know, you're exploring what might have been and how her characters might have ended up if things had been just a slightly different. And her last two books, A Life After Life and A God in Ruins, really thoroughly go into Todd and Teddy Todd. So, yeah, I would highly recommend her if you like a good read about meaningful topics and something that will just, you know, connect and possibly make you think more about your own life.
I hadn't heard of those last two, Kathy. So are they the Brody, the investigator?
The Brody ones are When Will There Be Good News, Started Early, Took My Dog, One Good Turn,
great title.
And Case Histories. So they all have that detective, Jackson Brody, in it. And Life After Life was written in 2013, and A God in Ruins in 2015. She won a couple of awards for A God in Ruins, and it's been lauded as her best novel yet. So I've read Life After Life, loved that, but I haven't read A God in Ruins, so I'm saving myself up for that one.
Oh, yes, I'll have to get that too, A God in Ruins.
You can put out a Christmas request.
I agree on that one. Okay, and Lee, you were going to talk about someone that we're all having a bit of, we're not really sure how to pronounce her name.
We're going to call her Annie Prue. Is that right?
It's actually P-R-O-U-L-X. Yeah, so I think you'll know some of these ones once Lee starts talking about it. So,
yeah, so I chose this because I had really enjoyed the shipping news, which was published in 1993. Like I said before, won a Pulitzer Prize, and is very evocative of landscape, which I've got a bit of a penchant for, I think.
Yes,
I like writers that can transport you to a different context than your own. So Annie actually didn't start publishing books till she was in her 50s. Mm. I think by what I've read about her, she's quite an eccentric character. Like she's had variety of relationships, and she's done the sort of sell up everything and go and live in the remote area and then come back again. And so she's quite interesting. And like I say, her latest book, Barkskins, which has just been published this year, is 713 pages, I think, and she's now 80. So that's a fair effort. She's really strong on sort of rural environments. So she's an American writer, and it's very strong on rural environments. And the car manufacturing company, just to pick a topical one, has left. So she's really working class and sort of rural.
Yeah.
But the shipping news, which was made into a film, is a really interesting one. I was reading reviews about it, and actually some people, you know how they take pleasure in saying, oh, I don't know why it got any prizes, is pathetic. I was thinking, it's a bit hard to argue that when it sold so many and was made into a film. But the character in that, Coyle, is this pathetic man, you know, barracking for him.
yes, that's right. Yeah, well, actually, I also think, though, you don't need to actually like all characters in books. You know, I don't mind if I don't like them.
No.
But it is also nice if you start off not liking them and end up really liking them.
Well, I think in Barkskins, I won't flip between books because it gets too confusing, but I think that would be one of my criticisms of what I really liked about it was, so he's this hopeless character, and he's had this wife, Petal, who gets killed in a car accident. He's just a real whore. That's all you can say about her.
I guess.
Oh, but I saw that. So after her death, he ends up going back to his ancestral home in Newfoundland, into that really sort of difficult, bleak, romance, and rekindles his self-worth and becomes the father that he wanted to be. So that's a bit, you know, a happy ever after ending. But it's just what sets it apart is just its fantastic environmental descriptions of the cold and the howling winds, you know. So I'll read just a little bit. There were two sections I thought were quite interesting. It's just describing a storm that wakes up the inhabitants during the night, this passage. Cautiously he opened the door, felt it leap as the wind smote it, and wrestled it closed. A fan of snow across his kitchen floor, his naked footprint in it. Every window in the house rattled, and outside a cacophony of rolling buckets, slapping ropes, snapping tarpaulins against the roar. The wires between his house and the utility pole keen discordancies that made his scalp crawl. The cold was straight from the glaziers, racing down the smoking ocean. He thrust chunks of wood into the coals, but the chimney barely drew. The wind, he thought, was blowing so hard it was like a cap over the chimney, if that was possible. Yeah. We've actually had this weather, haven't we?
Well, I was just thinking that could have been me on Sunday. Yeah. I was frightened to go out of the house. It was so windy.
It was actually really shocking. We had a couple of blasts out at Skeens Creek where you looked outside and I could see little branches breaking off and just, you know, tunnelling down the driveway. And I thought,
the book or not, I thought I had, but I've still got that vision of in the movie of them tying the house down. They tie it down in the book?
Yeah, because he finds out, because he goes back there with his aunt. Discovering a sense of self-worth is he takes his aunt with him, and it turns out she's had quite a horrific history, which involves the family in sort of a big scandal. And apparently they were sort of banished from the village, and they pulled the house out over the ice to this point, and it was roped down because it was such an extreme spot where they were. In the storms that lash the coastline.
We've all had experience of recently.
So I just think that boxes stunned by the heat. Coyle breathed through his mouth, squinted against dazzle. Although Billy Pretty warned, pointed to the northeast horizon at violet clouds pulled from a point. Travel billows in fantastic patterns, as though a paper marbler had worked through them with his combs, making French curls, cascades, and winged nonpareil fountains.
Lovely. Yeah, that's always the thing from that. That'll be the thing that makes or breaks a book for me is the quality of the writing.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about John Banville before, and you know, it wouldn't matter to me what he wrote about. It wouldn't. I don't even need a story. You know, it's just. Your mind, but it's such a skill. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, there can be all sorts of stories that you like Kate Atkinson sounded really interesting to me in the sort of idea of the story that would make you turn the page. But the writers that have that power of language, they are the ones that really stay with you.
That's true.
They just live in your mind, those images.
Yes, well, Kate Atkinson has that too. That she is a very, very good writer, but in that humorous vein, which is really great. Which also John Banville is a bit too. You know, he makes me chuckle. So maybe Annie Proulx. She hasn't got that sort of humour running through. It's a little bit darker.
Yeah, no, there's some sort of farcical scenes with Coyle and the funny things that he does. But basically, it's a bleak environment, but it brings out these sort of real elemental human qualities, and the characters are really rich. You know, she's drawn them with such obvious knowledge of humans and the way they behave, you know, the way that they tease one another and the sort of language that they use, just got that real ear for.
Yes, she wrote Brokeback Mountain too, didn't she? It was a short story.
Yeah. So she actually was writing short stories before she wrote The Shipping News. Art Songs, which is sort of set in New England, and again it's about that sort of tells about it, except that it's very bleak but also very transporting, like you are in that bleak environment, and whilst that can be sound like a bit depressing, It can actually be quite rich because you feel like you've had an experience that you actually have never even lived.
Yes. So are the settings always bleak?
Yes, I would say so. Sorry, I've still got my bit of a cold. No. The other one, Postcards, is a different sort of structure. It's about a character called Loyal Blood, she always has really unusual names, who at the start of the book commits what is a crime, quite a vicious crime, and he has to leave. And all the rest of the stories are postcards from various places. Etc. But again, a bit bleak. But you know, there's. I think any writer who can swap between styles and genres is, you know, to be admired. And and she can certainly swap between the short story and a larger, you know, novel form. So these are really interesting short stories.
So, funnily enough, I just picked up postcards at the down at the op shop last week. Yes. And so I took it home and it was sitting on the bench. And then a friend came over and said, oh, can I borrow that? So I haven't, it's been whisked away as soon as it got in. So hopefully I'll get it back. And
for and thinks, who's that? Who let me that?
So that postcards, that's not short stories though, or is it?
Yeah, it is. It is sort of. They're separate.
Okay. Each of the postcards.
And then the last one I was going to talk about was the one that's just been published, Barkskins. 713 pages. Did I mention that? But I did read all of them. So she talks about how she hesitated to start this because she felt it was such an epic thing to do, and I can see why. So it's basically spans the years from 1693 to 2013, and it's based around the story of two Frenchmen, René Selle and Charles. Oh, here we go, another French word, Duquet or Duquette or something. Who arrive in what's called New France, which is Canada, as indentured labour. And one of them, René Selle, ends up marrying into an Indian tribe, and the other one is a very unscrupulous developer. So it just tracks the stories, continually swapping between the descendants of both. Characters regularly get killed off in the most unusual ways. You know, like they'll just get their foot caught around something and then bang, they're in the river and that's the end of them and we're on to the next person. Ooh. So it's quite an unusual read like that.
Yeah.
You don't sort of get particularly, you know, involved in the lives of characters. It's more the story. So basically it tells a story of how we as a Anglo-Saxons, I suppose, or white people have ravaged the environment throughout our history. So it's a story of how in America's development that was the theme, you know, take the environment and exploit whatever it's got until it ends and then go on to the next thing. So it's very much a sort of an environmentalist tome,
right?
You know,
well, yeah, well, that's depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really. It ends with, you know, the sort of environmental, the youngest generations of both sides coming together and sort of, without knowing necessarily they're connected, and trying to develop the sort of reforestation and the idea of, you know, a total ecosystem that we have to preserve, or as a human race, we've got nothing.
So she's trying to give us hope at the end.
Yeah, a little bit, but maybe sort of more a mission of things we can do. So I guess if you like those sort of stories that have a sort of a great historical pan, talk about interesting times. There's lots of information about the logging industry and the dangers and where the forests were.
One of the problems for you is there's sort of too much detail about those sorts of things, or?
No, I think it's just so inevitable where it's going to end, you know that this just moving on to the next area now, and it's going to be just, you know, more of the same, where they just chop down all the trees until they're all gone, and the Indians suffer because their environment's gone. And
so that's why you didn't like the book, because you found it too depressing.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. It's and also, I don't like the concept of a book that's been written with a single idea that it's trying to push, you know, because books have to be more multifaceted than that, I think.
Right. Maybe it's her getting towards the end of her life,
yeah,
and it's a thing that she perhaps feels very passionately about and wants to make a statement about it.
Struck me when I was reading it was that the Indians become part of the sort of environmental rape of the land, even though they're the ones that suffer most because of it. Because they're forced into the sort of money economy,
mm,
once their own traditional practices, you know, can't be their mainstay anymore.
Sounds like a very familiar,
yeah,
story.
But I was thinking about it in terms of Australia's history, yes, and the Indigenous people being pushed into that sort of, yeah, you know, the cattle ranch and the is about how Indigenous people referring to that time when they worked on the stations as, you know, they enjoyed the work,
yeah,
whilst also participating really in the ruination. I don't know anything else about American literature really, but I don't know if there's any story quite like this one.
Okay.
You know, telling it from the point of view. You tend to get those, you know, the story about how the West was won and the, you know, these fantastic families, whereas this is quite a murky tale.
Mm. To your review that I might read it, but I don't know now.
Well, it's certainly a very different read.
Mm,
a very different read.
Maybe just stick with postcards.
If you can get it back.
You're listening to Apollo Bay Radio. This is The Book Show. And she was going to say a couple more things, I think, about, well, some things related to bark skins.
I just thought I'd mention that people might have gone to a concert that was in the Mechanics Hall here in Apollo Bay earlier in the year. That was the one about the Festival of Little Halls or Small Halls, mm, or something. And there was a band there called Vishtun. Because we enjoyed it so much, and I think everybody was there did. And I just wanted to mention that sort of heritage, that French Canadian heritage, is very much the setting for bark skins.
Mm.
It's, you know, that sort of at a time when America was first colonised, those distinctions weren't there between Canada and England, you know, Canada and the US, and the different colonies of England and France were very vague entities. So there's still a lot of that French heritage. And these original settlers that start this book, they are part of that French heritage, but they move down, mm, of course, into the English one.
Yeah, well, Lee bought the CD in, and we were hoping to play it, but we're having a bit of trouble with the CD player. But if we can get it to work, we might go out with it shortly. So I'll have a bit of a fiddle about with that. But we're also talking, we've just got a few minutes really left, for books that we've been reading at the moment. And if you were listening last week, Tony was recommending one called Cloud Atlas, which I borrowed off him after the show, by David Mitchell. But I'm actually having a bit of trouble getting into it. And I was just saying to Lee that I think it's probably best to not start a book in bed and sort of, you know, get a chapter or something under your belt first.
It's interesting, you know, some books, you have to read them in chunks. You can't do the couple of pages a night because you just, and I would say Annie Proulx was like that. It's too intense a world, to just pick up and drop.
Yes.
Once you're in there, you've got to get some value. You've got to be able to stay awake long enough to read a decent chunk so you get started.
And considering the thickness of bark skins, if you only did a couple of pages a night, it could take the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's probably a holiday book.
Yeah, so I am. I've started that, but struggling a little. And so I suppose you haven't really got anything else on the go at the moment, Lee, because you've just finished bark skins.
No, and I'm really finding with this show that I just end up with too much reading material to get through. I'm feeling stressed about it. I bought to read, and I've just started it, the John Banville one.
The Untouchables.
The Untouchables, the one about Anthony Blunt. And really enjoying the start of that. So
yeah,
I think that's one that'll have me for the next little while.
Yeah, well, not too thick, that one, fortunately. So that probably won't take you all that long. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a real favourite of mine, John Banville. Unpacked a few of his the other day, and I thought, I might read them again. But actually, I think I'm going to read these Kate Atkinson ones again now, because it's been so long since I read them. And just having a look at it again for the show, because I knew that Kathy was going to talk about her, I thought, oh, yeah, that was so good. I better pick that up again.
It's so interesting, isn't it? You need help with guiding your reading. I hope we're helping somebody out there.
Oh.
Because there are so many books that you could delve into that aren't published this year, so you don't read reviews of them. You've got to somehow discover them by
just wander into a library and look at shelves. Like, I've got no idea what I want to read.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really do, and like you, have got a lot of recommendations from this show. So, I should have written them all down. But anyway, they're podcasts, so I should actually be able to.
I think Brian actually does put up on the website the names of the titles. So, yeah, because I haven't written down Kate Atkinson, so I'll have to go back and have a look.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, I can loan you a few of those because I've got, I think, as I said, I sort of wanted that first book again. You know, it really wasn't what I was expecting. So, yeah, she, in that way, what you were saying about Annie Prowl before, how she can sort of move from genre to genre, and that's what sort of surprised me about Kate Atkinson, because I wasn't expecting a detective or a private investigator, I think he is, when I started that next book. But the last two that Kathy was speaking about sounded good, so I'll get hold of those.
When I was thinking about who I'd discuss tonight, I was thinking there's so many that you could have done for that reason, just gone back through the back catalogue of things that you've read that you really enjoyed.
Yes.
And that's really interesting too, that to do that and wonder whether you'd still like them or whether books are locked into a period in your life.
Yes, that's a good point. But I think actually just looking at the Kate Atkinson ones, I think I will enjoy them again. And again, it's because of that humour and the complexity of the story, you know, and that flipping backwards and forwards and just things being slowly sort of drip-fed to you. You know, you're not to know.
Changes from she often does this swap between where she's living to a new place entirely. She said she only took books with her that she wanted to have,
mm-hmm.
that she liked, and I think that's a gorgeous idea too, to just go to your bookshelf and get rid of all the things that are there that, you know, they're just clogging up space, and only keep the ones you like.
Yes, well, actually I've taken boxes and boxes down to the op shop over the last couple of weeks because I've been unpacking.
Well, I kept all my Poldark books, and then all of a sudden, Poldark's back in fact.
So is that TV show going to go on and on?
Well,
and on
I don't
ad
know.
Infinitum?
I don't know, because I think the TV show's focusing on the very attractive Poldark figure.
Isn't he gorgeous?
Whereas the last few deal with the children. He's become an old man. So
oh, right. Yeah, we don't want him to become old. He could just stay just like that.
It is fascinating the way that books become the centrepiece of television and film. You see, so that's so often. Like at the moment on ABC, they've got Poldark, and then it's followed by Wolf Hall.
Oh, that's right. Which I'm just loving. Louis Mantel. Yes. Well, I haven't read that yet. Friend's got that. I'm meant to get it. Yeah. Well, that's right. So, and we were also talking before about how, you know, so many of the books that we've discussed over the last few weeks have ended up as movies. Mm. It's extraordinary. Well, I suppose the movie producers have got to get their ideas from somewhere.
Yeah. Yes, that book, The Light Between the Oceans, that I was talking about, the Australian one about the lighthouse, that's currently showing. And that's sort of, you know, big release. I haven't read a review of it, but that'd be interesting. It would probably make quite a good film because it's got a strong storyline and it's also be very visually attractive.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, it's probably just about time for us to wrap up. So you've been listening to the book show on 3ABR, not Triple R, as I said before, when I was in a bit of a panic when nothing was working here. So we'll be podcasting this. So if you, yeah, if you miss it, and if you miss it, you won't be listening to me anyway, but it will be there for someone to download or listen to later if they wish. So thank you very much, Lee, for coming in. It's been a great pleasure, as always.
Oh, you're welcome.
And Brian will be back in the seat next week.
He's on a Footscray jaunt. He's gone to see the hallowed turf for himself, I think.
Oh, has he?
No, he's disguised it as some other sort of important trip, but that's really what it is.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.